This podcast is a quest for well-being, a quest for a meaningful life through the exploration of fundamental truth. Enlightening ideas, insights on physical, mental, and spiritual health. The inspiration is love. The aspiration is to awaken new ways of thinking that can lead us to a new way of being. Being well. Welcome to Body, Mind, and Soul Healing Conversations.
Effective Listening is an online healing community dedicated to everyone getting to thrive in this life as themselves. A truly supportive environment is essential for humans to thrive. In order to co-create a better world, we need to learn and practice the art of effective listening. By learning and practicing effective listening, we create a supportive environment and empower each other towards self-actualization. Valeria interviews Ilya Paryshky. He is the founder of Effective Listening, a group process that creates one-on-one listening partnerships for mutual healing and transformation. He holds a master's in drama therapy from the California Institute of Integral Studies and is a licensed marriage and family therapist in California, Oregon, Colorado, and Washington, D.C., where he practices online couples and individual therapy. Ilya is an expert leader of personal growth workshops and group processes and has helped thousands of people heal and overcome restrictions to their authenticity. He devotes himself to staying at the cutting edge of the healing arts. He has trained in countless therapeutic modalities and has taken part in tens of thousands of hours of experiential workshops and thousands of hours of individual counseling, meditation, yoga, dance and movement, theater, and other self-actualization processes. He continues to vigorously pursue both personal and professional development and can't overstate the importance for therapists and healing professionals to do extensive amounts of both professional training and personal healing work in order to be authentically and skillfully available for others. Ilya is also adept at simplifying and boiling down the essence of complex processes. Effective listening is the culmination of Ilya's wide-ranging experience and training, and offers an accessible synthesis of powerful personal growth techniques, borrowing from many different disciplines and modalities, but creating something truly unique. In addition to his passion for therapy and healing, Ilya is also a performance artist and stand-up comedian, where he uses his life story and experiences to bring levity, light, and laughter to subjects as deep as the nature of consciousness and the meaning of life, and as silly as multilingual animal sounds. Ilya is also a proud father of two young daughters. He is a devoted husband, married to his best friend and favorite person on the planet. And he lives in an eco-village, which he finds to be an ideal environment for his children to grow up, freely roaming and playing with friends. Ilya has a deep longing and commitment to be of service and to make the world a better place. He has developed effective listening as a means to that end. In his work as a psychotherapist, he is often confronted with the fact that humans need more than a therapy session once a week to thrive. We need a network of supportive, skillful humans we can count on. The effective listening method is not a therapy and is not meant to replace therapy. Effective listening unleashes the awesome power and natural healing capacity that each of us has inside of us. It gives us a living network of people and a community of practice with whom to share and develop our dormant ability to give and receive love and build the collective resources to create a world that truly meets the needs we have. Meet Ilya at effectivelistening.org and ilyaparyshky.com. Here's the interview with Ilya Paryshky.
Hello, Ilya Popescu. I probably didn't get it right, but and I did mention off record as well. I apologize about my very first question. It's always who you are in your own words. So who is Ilian in this very moment?
Oh, well, thank you for asking, Valeria. Thank you for creating the space.
Thank you.
To get to be here with you and get to share myself. So who is Ilia Porishsky? Which your pronunciation is very close.
I'm glad you repeated.
Who is Ilia Porishsky? Well, I start off, I'm looking out of a window and I'm on a planet. I'm an intelligence on a planet. That much I know or think I know about myself. I can feel the sensations in my body. So I'm an embodied being living here. And I play many, 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 many different roles in many different communities. And probably the ones I'm proudest of, I'm a dad. I'm a dad to two girls, two young beings, a seven-year-old and a four-month-old. And I'm a devoted husband who married his best friend and continue to be totally in love after 14 years or so together. I think it's 14.
Beautiful.
Time flies. For work, I'm a psychotherapist. I work with individuals and groups and couples in several states. So I work in California, in Washington, D.C., in Colorado, and in Oregon with individuals and couples. And I'm also the founder of Effective Listening, which is not me in the role of therapist. It's actually a peer-to-peer process that I teach where people learn how to take turns and listen to each other in a way that is mind-blowingly effective, healing, transformative, wonderful. So those are some of the things that sort of spring to mind and in response to that question.
Yes, beautiful. Now, again, what's not to love about it? I think I said that. I guess the follow-up question, I have way too many here initial questions, but the way you not even define yourself, but the way you describe yourself initially, especially, it sounded very spiritual, the so-called somebody who is spiritualized or living a spiritual life would answer that way. So did I interpret that correctly? And if I did, what is spirituality to you and how did you come to these understandings of yourself?
I love that question. Thank you for asking that. You know, I suppose my spiritual journey begins with birth. You know, as with any of us, or perhaps before, that's not something I know about or apprehend firsthand. But for me, I was born in Russia, in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union. And so I was born into an atheist society, where religion and spirituality were seen as a kind of backwaters of the mind, a kind of opiate for the masses, an unnecessary waste of time. And that's what I was conditioned to believe. So that's kind of my upbringing is in this atheist conviction and tradition. So I came to, definitely a spiritual, understanding through my own experiences. And I would say I've had a kind of series or cascade of awakening processes throughout life. And one of them was actually immigrating from the former Soviet Union to the United States of America. And realizing that the person that I thought I was is not, it doesn't work here. It didn't, you know, I had this sort of that was probably the initial shock, at least in terms of my conscious experience. I've actually, you know, I've done a lot of inner work, and I have been able to go back and start to heal some of the earlier shocks that I don't even remember, like birth trauma and early attachment wounding that I don't remember in a kind of narrative fashion, but it's inside my body. And so I've done lots of work in sort of shedding some of the ways that those experiences constrict my view. Right. So this first experience of migration, it really taught me that I'm not who I think I am. I guess that's right. Or that I can be a completely different person depending on the circumstances that I'm in. And that there's this disconnect between societal me and internal me. Because I had to sort of reconstruct almost from scratch a new way of being in English. Like the way I'm speaking to you now, it's, you know, this is all stuff I figured out. And slipil is the Russian word for like pasted together, yes. You know, this way of this way of Englishing without an accent. I figured that out. I initially had a sort of British Russian accent. You know, the journey continued and took a variety of twists and turns, and actually the way, you know, I'm realizing that I could talk about it for a really long time.
Yeah.
Right. So just, in terms of zeroing in on how things became truly spiritual for me, you know, I studied philosophy in college, really trying to answer the question. I was always really, really taken by this question of where am I really? Where am I and what is happening really?
Right.
I was really taken by that. Like what is true? Mm. I really wanted to know. I wasn't satisfied just living day to day. I really wanted to understand what is really happening. Yeah. And so I studied philosophy for very intensively and to the exclusion of all else. I sort of like went deep into just reading, studying, trying to understand and really alienated myself from the friends that I had at the time. I mean, I was no fun to be around. I was very serious. Yes. Mm-hmm. All I wanted to talk about was Sartre and Nietzsche and French poetry, Baudelaire and the existentialist take on the current moment and empiricism and what can we really know, et cetera. And I didn't get a lot of engagement from my peers. So I just went more and more into my own internal space, trying to figure it out. And it dawned on me one day. It just really through deconstructionism, I started to take on literary criticism, and deconstructionism was all the rage at the time at the school I was at. And it really dawned on me that reality, as far as I see it, is a construction of my mind. Mm. And that all there is really is the present moment.
Mm.
It just dawned on me one day. I was standing there. I remember it so well. I was holding a bag of flour. I was about to make pancakes. And it hit me that there's just me, or not even me. It's just this now. As soon as it's in words, it's not quite right. But it hit me. And then it almost like a celebration, I took this bag of flour and just whoosh. And all this flour came down all around me. It was a glorious moment. Glorious moment. So that was just the beginning. I'll shorten it and say, for a while I played in that mode. And then I learned that, well, even though it's all constructed, doesn't mean I can just insert whatever I want. Like there is an abiding reality.
Right.
I could say I learned that the hard way,
right?
By trying to not sleep, just really experimenting, just doing things, just completely freewheeling. And I learned there are limits. There are real physical laws that come from somewhere. Mm. And that's actually what led me toward working with emotions. Because one of the things I then started to do is I realized I had been so disconnected from fellow humans, and I was so unrelatable and so far away, and actually so in pain around it. I was really in a lot of pain that I wasn't acknowledging to myself. And then I started to actually first started grounding through meditation. I would just sit there, and I didn't have a sangha at first. I just sat.
Right.
I read somewhere that all you do is just sit and don't do anything else. So I saw it as a kind of radical empiricism. Like, I'm just going to see what exists when I do nothing, when I add nothing and I subtract nothing. I just observe.
Mm.
Let me just see what happens. And it blew my mind. I sat there. I got really into it. So I sat a lot. I wouldn't count the hours. I just sat and sat and sat. And then I started doing retreats. And then it was actually at a 10-day, I did some service periods. So I was at a retreat center for a little over a month. And I was sitting there and I could feel my heart was just this expanded enormity of it was this sense of, wow, do I want to connect with people? And that's sort of what launched me into connecting. So, spirituality is something that has guided me, that I've related to this sense of being alive, of being a being, of inquiring into what really is. But I haven't really thought of it as a spiritual inquiry. I just thought of it as, this is me living my life. Right. But I absolutely can relate to the metaphor of a spiritual inquiry. Absolutely. And I think it's a beautiful one and very relatable to all of these experiences. I could recast these experiences as my spiritual quest, my quest at discovering what is.
But in a way, it's not, we don't need words or labels, terms for that, right, Ilya? And that's, that sounds very natural to me.
Yeah.
Your entire journey up to now sounds so natural for some of us, you see, but it's not all of us. Some people cannot relate to it. And I wonder if that has to do with past lives that we have been practicing. You know, we have been going deeper into it, learning all these things previously, and then we.
You know, Valeria, I wonder about that too. And one of the things that happened for me personally on my journey is that I would wonder about something, and then I'd start pretending like it was true, or imagining it was true, living as if it was true, and it really got me confused. So at some point, I decided to kind of just strip away anything I don't personally apprehend, and leave everything else with a kind of curious maybe. Like I can't deny, one thing I know is we don't know reality. There's so much complexity to it. So past lives, absolutely possible. Absolutely possible. And I would love to have an experience or many experiences of apprehending that. And I've yet to have an experience that I couldn't explain a different way that would give me that sense, I just touched a past life. But I'm very open to it. And it's a curiosity for me too. It does seem like entirely within the realm of possibilities.
Yes. Yes, that has been my case too. It's fun. I think it's fun, but it's something that a kind of fun that I would not look for it in a sense of diving deep into, you know, getting to know what happened in past lives and what, although I have had lots of natural, spontaneous, mystical experiences, and I sense that I mean, it feels very much real to me as well, those that have happened. But it always the message keeps me grounded in the moment, in what's happening here. And that, to me, it's that's where everything really is, if there is such a thing as everything. As a thing. But wow, you said so many things there. I love the process of learning, though, you know, that you went through. And some of us do, that to me, it's connected to being open and receptive and listening. So I guess that, that now it might be the perfect time to ask open questions about effective listening. So I know you have already alluded to it, but I would like to hear a bit more about this concept of effective listening, especially when it comes to groups, because now it's almost like something here is being asked in a sense of complete openness. They are not really, it's almost like an ego death in a way. It's almost like going through, you know, doing one of those psychedelic journeys and really trying to eliminate the ego. Is that, am I interpreting that correctly, or? You are really going that deep with the group.
Yes. Yeah. It's a very deep experience. Absolutely. And it does require a certain kind of complete openness. And it's something that I came to out of necessity. I could say, like, I think the best way to explain it is to maybe relate what was missing for me and what this completed or made way for or made possible. Right. So there's this. Oh, I think what you refer to as the ego is maybe can be thought of as like the actor, the person we're being at any given moment that makes other people feel okay about the fact that we're in the space, right?
Yes.
That there's these certain rules and constructed sort of strictures. You have to do this. Hey, how are you? Pretty good, thank you. Right? There's just a certain flow of being, and what that allows for is a kind of peaceful coexistence. But what that erases, and for me, it was so painful to not have a place where I could just be completely unfilteredly, totally open, including any and all emotions that surface. Right. And not have to fight for the attention of another person using regular conventions of conversation where it's my turn only as long as it's my turn until someone else says, okay, I got something to say, right? And takes the attention away in a way. And so these groups supply a reliable source of attention in which individuals are invited to be completely openly themselves and experiment with that experience. And what tends to happen in the groups is because we live and interact in a more limited manner, what tends to happen is with the permission, the widening of the permission of what you are allowed to be in the presence and with the loving attention of others, what you're allowed to be while having attention of other people is so much more. And what tends to happen is people, you know, it takes a group or two for everyone to get there, but right away, some people get there where people just really open up. Emotions start flowing. The things that people are pretending not to feel, even to themselves sometimes, start to surface. And then the way that the ego or the personality is constructed around holding those things in place, well, that gets a little more space and a little more room to then express itself in a different way. So that's almost a direct consequence of doing this process is being able to show up more flexibly in life.
Yes. Flexibly, that's an interesting word. Flags. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a word that I was not expecting to hear. That's interesting. It just kind of caught me by surprise. Flexible.
Oh, cool.
What is to be flexible? Yeah, usually, well, maybe I'm just in love with words. Open, being receptive, being present. But yeah, flexible. That's adaptability, flexibility. Yes. These group meetings, are they online or in person? And if they are online, do they show their face? That's a audio like we are doing here.
Great question. So right now, in its current form, the groups are online. Mm. And I love them that way. I love them being online. And yes, people show their face. People are absolutely present with their full face. Yeah. Right there. We really need everyone's attention for the group to go well. Yeah. And it's not hard because we have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So we joke around a lot. We play games and right. And it's almost like the lighter it can get, then the heavier the stuff we can take on.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. So yes, they're online now. They've met in person before.
Okay.
Sometimes I run them in person. Sometimes I'll run sort of an ad hoc group at a festival or at an in-person event where it just meets once, let's say, or a couple of times. But the 16-week introduction to effective listening groups are online groups where the camera's on the whole time. They meet for 2 hours. There are six people. So it's a small group. There are six of us. And we start as strangers. Mm. And by the time the group gets rolling, people are in love with each other.
I can imagine.
Because it's so natural. Falling in love with someone is so natural. Mm. All you need to do is see them. Just see them as they are.
Mm. Wow. Wow. What a beautiful insight, message, wisdom. Yes. Wow, that's really beautiful. And I mean, it sounds to me very much that this is a spiritual, you see, I use the word spiritual, but I know it's just a natural thing, right?
Valeria, I love that you said that. I can't, for the life of me, I can't distinguish between what isn't, like, what isn't spiritual?
Yes.
You know, there's some way that spiritual, like, it's all included. The word natural for me, too, it's one of those words. That, like, what isn't natural? Like, you know, some people think buildings or rockets.
Yeah.
But isn't volition just a part of nature? Mm. Isn't human will just an expression of the natural flow of things?
Mm. Yes. Yes, a billion times to that truth.
Right?
Yes.
Right. And yes. And this process, you know, in a way, what we do in effective listening, it happens all the time. It's happening continuously and spontaneously. People are using one another's attention and their minds and their hearts and their beings flourish because of the attention of others.
Yeah.
It's something we do, you know, when we have a wonderful conversation with somebody, and we both come away glowing.
Yeah.
That's just what we take and distill down to its essence in effective listening. Mm-hmm. We take something that's very natural that happens for people spontaneously, but then we get very deliberate and very focused, like a laser beam, on one person at a time, really allowing each person to unearth the kinds of things that make them stuck in life.
Mm-hmm.
The kinds of things that have them repeating painful patterns. Those are the things that people tend to start to focus people's attention on and go, hey, give me a hand with this. I'm so irritated by X, Y, Z, right? And help me out with that. And then we just go. We uncover the roots. We work through them. They get unearthed. They get worked through. And you walk away going, wow, okay. I'm a little less bothered by that. Maybe not completely less bothered, but a little less bothered,
sure.
Right?
Yes, yeah. It very much sounds this way. So another question is about the people that join the group. Are there they already your clients of yours. They are doing healing work, interested in therapy. I would love to know who would be the perfect participant per se to your group.
That's, you know, the perfect participant would be somebody who hears about this group and gets a yes. They get a clear sense, and maybe it's even a little bit scary, but it's still a yes. I want to do that. I want to show up for people and I want to share and I want to grow and I want to learn and I want to see people. I want to be close to people. Really, the ideal participant is just someone who is ready to love people and love themselves a bit more deeply. And who's willing and able to face whatever barriers they have accumulated over a lifetime of taking on damage, taking on hurts, taking on painful experiences, and building up a little protective cocoon around themselves. You know, we all have our version of some protective bubble in which we function better and coming out of it. So a willingness to come out of that protective shell and see what life is like outside of it. So that, you know, if that speaks to somebody, then they would be an amazing participant in one of these groups.
Yes, I love that. It sounds very, not just spontaneous, when in a sense of flow. So it's something like, it's almost like a river, the water touches whatever it's in its way. So it would just becomes part of it. And I know the natural world is very, it's a beautiful reference for that.
Yes.
Right? Like the rivers.
Yes. Just, yes.
And when you mentioned, gosh, I have so many questions here, but I'm going out of, because you're so inspiring too with the, I love how deep you go. When you mentioned, I do often say that too, everything's spiritual, everything is natural. But then, you know, like you mentioned earlier about your spiritual, and you didn't even know that there was a spiritual journey, but whatever you were uncovering, discovering.
No, we can call it that. We can call it
that. Yeah, is that okay to call it? Yeah, just pronounce the words for the sake of a better word. So everything's spiritual, everything's natural. And I came across, I mean, I had a lot of resistance since I was a child. Even like to separate things, so everything was just a bundle of whatever we can call God, universe. And it was just like I saw everything as one thing. But then, very quickly, I learned that, like you said, the hard way, that you know we have a mind for a reason. So the mind, it seems to me, a great reflection for that which we call the unconditioned self, God itself, but also a tool, right, to navigate this reality as a playful thing. You say, I always see that as a playful thing, right? Playful tool. So I don't think it's a good idea to be naive about ignorance, which means not in a pejorative way, but in a way of ignoring what is true, true nature, you know, the real us, which is not even who, it's what. So for me, it has been like this long journey, Ilya, to really understand that, you know, with the mind and without the mind, you know. And then now I come across every day, like little insights, you know, from experience. Like today I had one, a very powerful one, that made me emotional, and I was wondering where that came from. I was just trying to search, why, you know, the emotion, where is it coming from? What's the message here? I asked my husband to do something. I'm not, because I know the essence, I know that I'm talking to that fundamental essence, that the interconnectedness, the interconnected substance of everything is just, it's one thing. So let's say it's God. Let's use that word. So I asked my husband to do something. And I think in the way I said it to him, it felt like, and he did it right away. Yes, I'll do that now. And it felt to me like I was telling him what to do. And then it almost made me cry because you don't need, nobody needs anyone. The truth is, we all have everything that's needed. We all there, whole, complete. So I guess I tapped deeper into something that I have a lot of resistance in doing, or, you know, as a role here, as a leader, as somebody who is teaching people what to do or how. It doesn't make any sense to me at some level. And maybe at that level, the deeper level, because you and me, we are this, is everything the same? There's no separation. Mm-hmm. There's no difference. So when I saw him, I just asked him to do that. And he just kind of put his head down in a sense of looking at the computer and doing what I asked him to do. Mm-hmm. Then it felt like it was, you know, he didn't know that he had the power to already know what I asked him to do. I didn't have to ask him to do it. So I don't know. I would love to ask you that question about, so what's natural, what's not natural, what's spiritual, not spiritual. Have you ever contemplated the idea that ignorance is real in the sense of, you know, not knowing what you are and behaving in a way that it's painful even to watch?
Well, I love your vulnerability in this question. And I you know, what I trust in, is that there is an intelligence, a deeper intelligence that's guiding the emotion that right. comes to the surface. And allowing for that emotion to really surface without judgment, just allowing it. There is a learning, a message, a deepening of, you know, a coming away from ignorance toward toward knowing in that experience. So, and one of the things is I would never, right, as you alluded to, I would never define somebody's ignorance and say, oh, this is what you should be thinking. This is right. This is right. This is smart. Yeah. This is ignorant.
Yes.
Right. I really think that we all have. You know, we are all intelligences.
Right.
We are all brilliant and limited. And I think I love what you said about not being complete.
Yes.
Onto ourselves, and at the same time, we need each other. We really do. You know, if it was just me over here, we wouldn't be having a conversation. Right. It's there's no dance without a partner.
Yes.
Right. And there's right yeah. And there's something about the attention and the awareness of another person that's deliberately just really trying to see you as the goodness that you are deep inside, no matter what you've done, no matter what you feel. That has a powerful transformative effect.
Right. Right.
And it does tend to, right? And it does tend to... We have almost a self-guiding system toward greater knowing, toward a reduction of ignorance.
Yes,
beautiful. And when another person's attention is available to us, it's like fuel. We take it and we take it and we just kind of motor our way over to a greater view, a more inclusive view, a more loving view, a view that leaves nothing out, a way of being that's really good for the whole and ourselves.
Yes. I don't know if you answered my question, but...
I don't either.
Yeah. Well, beautifully, you added so many.
I think I just tried to vibe on what you asked approximately. But if you wanted to sharpen the question, I'd be happy to try again.
Yeah, maybe the question was not clear, right, Ilya? It's not, because it's not clear anyway, it doesn't make sense even, to have a conversation about something that we cannot, something that's not an object, it cannot be described really. So this concept of seeing life as complete, as whole, as limitless, as infinite, the wholeness, I mean, everything, it's wholeness to me. But at the same time, as you said, there is that, something that it's here that's able to detect something that's not in, let's say, something that's not being perceived as whole from out there. So it's almost an eye. Look, it's an eye looking here that is, it's whole, it's complete, but it doesn't know that it is. So it's, so I don't know if we are actually able to perceive that separateness from others, if we are not actually in the state of separateness, so which we are, right? In the body, mind, we are separate. So I guess my point about being natural in spiritual, everything is natural, everything is spiritual. Yes, in the context of freedom, yes, because everything is God, is in God. So there's nothing that is not spiritual or whole or natural. And at the same time, which is not a paradox, it's just in the world of experience, it feels like that wholeness can be forgotten. And for a second, for a moment, for a lifetime, we can experience this reality as broken, as incomplete, as unhealed, and all that, as sick. So, and I think that would change, of course, that changed the experience of that organism, the body, mind.
Yes, indeed.
And then those, perhaps you and I would be able to notice that, to perceive that too. Wait a minute, this person is suffering, but unnecessarily because he or she is whole. So that makes me emotional, and I'm trying to figure out why.
Beautiful.
Because it seems like if I see that, would it be so wonderful if you knew that you already, what are you looking for? I think that's what it is, you know, Ilya. As it gets me emotional, isn't that interesting? Every time I think about it.
So beautiful.
You're already, what are you looking for?
So beautiful. And this, wow.
Yeah, I guess, that's interesting because I don't know where the emotion's coming from. And I know you might call it compassion, empathy, but what part of me is disconnected? I'm thinking here because because there's a part of me that's seeing, perceiving something else as being broken, as being... So I don't know. It's but you, as you said earlier too, it's not... It's just half real, but it's still real. If you put the hand in the stove, you get burned. So we don't. You want to know the rules, right?
I love being a part of your process here. This is so beautiful and brilliant, and just I just honor you for being open to feeling.
Yeah, thank you for listening.
Makes me emotional. Yes, that's right. That's right. Yeah. Wow. And this is in some ways it's kind of a taste of what we do in the groups. Is you would just keep going, right? I wouldn't stop you. I wouldn't interject with my own anything, except things that I thought would be helpful in you continuing to explore this, because you really are onto something incredibly beautiful, important, vital. And we would just continue to follow you. Just go, Valeria. Keep going.
Wow, you're doing beautiful work too. I mean, when I think about what you said, there's a video that I watched that you say something like the parts that we reject or that we hide, then they become disconnected. And now it's so much... It's harder for us to even interact with them. So that kind of made me, I don't think it made me as emotional, but it made me think about my own kind of journey, let's say, in the sense of hiding all my interest for spirituality, for deep connection, deep understanding, for this longing to embrace the truth. And I never really said that to so many people that I met along the way. I'm 47 now, and I remember hiding this for, 30 something years.
Wow.
So, yes, that created so much unnecessary suffering. Mm. The fact that I was hiding that part of myself. So I'm really grateful to...
Well, and incredible that you've reorganized yourself around sharing that part of yourself and allowing others to share it. It's so beautiful. It's very inspiring.
Yes, it feels that way. This connections you, like having these conversations, you feel like it feels like it, this is a reflection of that. Okay, this is although I can't talk this way with everyone. I cannot go as deep into it, which I would love to, but it's not always in order to connect with certain people. I don't think we need to share those parts of us that they are not ready to see. So no. I guess.
It's a very selective process. And it's part of it is we just need somewhere where we can be fully open. It doesn't need to be everywhere.
Yes, it doesn't have to be everywhere. yes. Yeah. So going back to the groups, you have introductory group, deepening group, you have one-on-one listening partnerships, and you have continuing to practice. Is that correct?
That's right. Did I miss something? That's right. That's right. Yeah. No, that's absolutely right. So the introductory group actually includes the one-on-one listening partnership. So what we do in the group is we prepare everybody to be able to take on a one-on-one session outside of group. They start shorter in the 15 minutes each side of things, and they grow to be more like 30, 40, 50 minutes each, right? Once people really feel a sense of ownership of the skills that we bring to bear to the listening part of the session. There's also a lot of skillfulness in sharing openly. And that's right. And a lot of us have learned to hold back. And so this is an invitation to sort of unlearn in a very deliberately safe for sharing space, to unlearn holding back and experiment with openly exploring at the edge of your own thinking and comfort, right? So that people are really just taking turns being investigators of their own internal landscapes. And so the one-on-one listening partnerships and the groups are always paired together. There's no group without a one-on-one listening partnership. On the other hand, once a group is over, after the 16 weeks, everyone is welcome to continue to practice with one another in the one-on-one listening partnerships. Those are relationships that you build and cultivate. And if it's going well, there's no requirement that it stop going. In fact, my hope is that people really see the value in continuing to have these relationships long after any given group is over. And then I offer ways to deepen in the process for people who are continuing to do it. There's monthly groups, there's biweekly groups, there's different. I'm actually working on a web course that someone who's just interested in learning how to do this process with just one other person can just play along with a kind of tutorial that allows them to deepen with one another and learn this process and see if they'd want to do a group. So kind of a way to step into it.
Right.
I'm developing more and more ways to have people continue to engage with the process once they learn how to do it.
Yes. Wow. What a beautiful thing. You know, you make me think about everyone becoming sort of a therapist, isn't it? To become a healer
Well, I think that's one of the things is you really don't need a license to be an effective healing presence in someone's life. You do need some skills, but they're very natural. People come in and, you know, they're very, very, very intuitively, very quickly helpful to one another. With just a few guidelines, right? And don't interrupt somebody when they're talking.
I was about to ask, do you have guidelines?
Right? That's right. Yeah, there's a few. So there's the preliminary, just bare bones guidelines of don't interrupt, don't give advice. Don't give advice. No. And these advice is so, advice communicates, I know better than you. And the truth is, You don't even know an inkling of what this other person's actual experience is. And when you say, I know better than you, it sends a message like, I don't trust you to figure it out. Mm. So we don't ever give advice. And we absolutely encourage emotional release and follow it. When an emotion comes, wow, beautiful. Allow it. Follow it, nurture it, go with it. And there's also confidentiality. It's very important that anything somebody says in a session, it's never talked about. And even we go as far as to not even talk about it to that person later on, because we're constantly, continuously in flux and evolving and growing beings. And so we don't want to hold somebody to something they were working on 2 weeks ago, and suddenly ask them about that thing. They're not there anymore, right? They did that work and integrated it in we don't know what ways. So we really trust each person's intelligence to really guide them to where they need to go. And that's what we take turns doing, is just furnishing our own active, warm, listening presence for the other person to benefit from. And then, you know, after the basic guidelines, there's a bunch of stuff we learn about how to make the process work. And that's sort of what we experientially learn together in the group on one another as examples, right?
Yeah.
So it's like a workshop that, you know, one at a time, we spotlight one person and we really go deep into their experience. And then from that, I point out certain principles, certain things to look for, certain ways you can engage when someone does this. You might want to consider doing this kind of move or that, right?
Right. Wow. It's really, the word again is beautiful. What are you doing? Do you also see, do you see clients one-on-one as a psychotherapist?
Yes. Yeah, I do. But, and to be clear, this work is not psychotherapy. Okay. It's peer-to-peer group process. Yes. And outside of this effective listening work, I'm also a licensed psychotherapist, and I meet with people, with individuals and with couples.
Yes. Okay.
So I work one-on-one and I work as a relationship therapist. Okay.
So that's wonderful to know. I'll have your website will be on the podcast notes, and looking for them. Yeah, effectivelistening.org. That's your
effectivelistening.org. That's the peer-to-peer work. And IliaParishsky.com, that's me as a therapist.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you for adding that. I did come across that website too. So I'll have both of them here listed.
Beautiful.
We're almost at the end. I do want to mention as well that you do your performance. You are a performance artist, stand-up comedian.
Indeed.
How amazing. And you, I mean, you do so many things. I know you mentioned something beautiful too about always engaging in some kind of, let's say, growth, inspiring activity. So dance, yoga, meditation, you have done pretty much at all. And I love that you use the word self-actualization. That has, I mean, that sounds spiritual again to me. Doing the inner work, it's really sounds, I mean, once you do the healing work, we can help. It seems like what the result is understanding, seeing, and kind of realizing what we are. It has been my experience. The more healing work I do, the more clear what I am becomes.
Yes, me too. Me too. And it's an endless well, I feel. And performance art and stand-up comedy is kind of my playground. It's where I really love. I love putting together little bits and testing them out and seeing what works. And I've been doing. I actually have a master's in drama therapy, so I had a performance thesis when I graduated with my psychotherapy degree, kind of self-revelatory performance. So that's been just such a life-enhancing aspect to my experience. And performance, it's another form of people using their attention, yeah. Right? And as the performer, it's a little different. You're there to entertain,
yeah.
Uh-huh. Right? But yes, there's endless amounts of healing work, and I continue to partake in weekly therapy sessions for myself as client. The effective listening sessions, I'm also very much an active participant in the listening partnerships. I'm one of the partners with everyone. One of the weeks, we're always swapping and changing who's partnered with who, but I partner with everyone. And there I'm using people's attention and going very directly at the things in me that still need integrating and healing and processing. So it's, yeah. I walk the talk, yeah. I do the work. It's not always comfortable, but it always is rewarding.
Wow. That's wonderful to hear too, Elia. So it goes back to that word that I love using as a concept, being open to life.
Yes.
As life itself.
Yes. Yes, indeed. It's so clear that you, that's one of the things from the very beginning. There's a quality to your voice. There's a quality to your presence and to your questions. You're responsive. You're open to life, to what is unfolding. Such a pleasure to have this conversation with you.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Thank you so much for your beautiful presence.
Thank you, Valeria.
And before we say goodbye for today, I don't want to end it. And hopefully we covered a lot of the topic. I know I didn't ask some of the questions I had here. So many questions I'm supposed to ask you. But I do have the ending question. And before we say goodbye, and then I want to make sure that I have the website. See, I have both of them here. It'll be on the podcast notes. So before we say goodbye for today, Elia, I'll ask a question that I usually ask everyone. Actually, I might change it. I just changed it. Mm-hmm. The mind changed itself.
Beautiful.
Yeah, for some reason, another question is being, I'm inspired to ask you a different question for some reason.
Wonderful.
So what is the meaning of freedom to you?
The word Leela comes to mind, divine play.
Yes.
Freedom, right? Freedom is non-resistance comes to mind. Freedom of flowing playfulness. And also, you know, what's coming to mind also is suffering. Suffering actually seems to be included in freedom. There's a kind of freedom excludes nothing. And I've often actually thought that maybe part of what's going on here is where this unlimited, unrestricted, all-powerful being that, well, because of freedom, because of why not, is having this very limited and separated and weird experience that afterwards turns out to be kind of a big joke. I get this sense sometimes, like, we're just going to be laughing so hard going, oh my God, I'm remembering myself now. What a weird ride. And
yes.
Let's do it again. That was awesome.
No. Yeah. I'm like, not again.
Okay. Yeah. Well, or at least we're free to do it again if we want. Who wants to go?
Oh gosh. Interesting. Yes, you're definitely onto something here too. Yes, thank you so much for being you again.
Thank you. Wow. Thank you, Valeria. So much fun. Thank you so much.
Yes. I have my hands in front of me and namaste.
Namaste.
We'll talk soon. Bye for now, Elia.
Sounds good. Bye for now, Valeria.
Oh, my.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about Elia Peryshky and his work, please visit effectivelistening.org and iliaperyshky.com.
To learn more about this podcast, please visit fitforjoy.org/podcast. Thank you again for listening, and bye for now.